We're here in the Catalyst studio today with David M. Jenkins, who is the producing artistic director of Jobsite Theater, which is in Tampa. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, sir.
So good to see you here across the Bay
today. It is good to be in the Bay.
Let me get right to it. You're directing right now at the Stress in the, it's called the Jabe Theater. Isn't it the smaller one? You're directing A Tune of Christmas.
That is right.
That's not exactly connected with Jobsite, is it? Explain this to me. How does that work?
Yeah, so for a number of years, the Stress Center used to produce in the Jabe Theater. Actually, they had a full-time annual company in that theater for a great number of years. Mm-hmm. So that company of actors would perform 4 or 5 productions over the course of the year. They were on year-long contracts. And over the course of time, you know, there are different programming people that have come and gone there at the Stress Center. And so a few of those folks got away from that model and quit producing in the Jabe and in favor of touring shows, booked engagements, rentals, and stuff like that. And there's a new programming team and a new philosophy. And so I was talking to Judy Lisi, and she said that, you know, one of the things they really wanted to do was get back to producing at the level of regional theater there in the Jabe. So I said, how can I help?
There are, what, 5 performing halls or theaters in the Stress? My God. Well, how does this affect what you do with Jobsite? I mean, aren't you competing with yourself?
You know, I don't think so. You know, Jobsite has a real specific niche, a real kind of programming that we go after. And it's not necessarily the same kind of programming that they would want to do in the Jabe Theater. So if anything, I view this as an opportunity. So one of the things that I think is great for us is that, you know, people who come to see A Tune of Christmas are going to recognize the people on stage. And basically all the artists that are working on it is Jobsite artists. Mm-hmm. We're just freelancing and under contract for the Stress Center. A Tune of Christmas is a really fun show. It's not the kind of show that necessarily Jobsite would have produced. It's just not necessarily a play that would fall within the scope of our mission.
You can't really call it a mainstream play. I mean, the tuna stuff is pretty wacky.
Right. Yeah. And at the same time, it's maybe on the edge of mainstream things that...
Well,
that,
sure. Know. It's closer to mainstream than what Jobsite does.
Right.
In a good way, folks. That's what we're
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it opens this week. Don't say tonight because this is probably going to air on Friday, but this is your opening weekend.
Correct.
Okay.
And it runs through December 22nd.
Who's in it? It's just 2 characters. I mean, 2 actors.
Right. 2 actors play 22 different characters over the course of the play. So we've got Derek Phillips and Spencer Myers, who are pretty familiar faces to the Jobsite stage and other regional stages. And so they've dug headlong into this thing and are playing 22 people with all those quick changes that go along with it. Did you ever happen to see these when you were in Gainesville?
Yes, at the Hippodrome. Yeah, sure, they did this stuff every year. I know I saw what's Greater Tuna is the first one.
Yep.
I'm sure I saw the Christmas one at some point. I mean, it's several lifetimes ago, but I'm sure I did.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago, folks. Jobsite is in its 21st season.
That's correct.
That's amazing. How long have you been there?
21 years. I'm a founder.
Oh, look, folks, Bill did his research. You're a founder. My God, I thought they just brought you in from professional land to make things
cool.
No,
so the funny story, the reason why I know you from Gainesville is that's where I was at before I moved here.
Uh-oh.
I was at the Hippodrome. And I did my internship at the Hippodrome. I worked with a Crosstown rep. I did my MFA at University of Florida. And I took a year off, basically, after finishing that up. And I came back to Tampa because I had a lot of friends that lived here. It's where I did my undergraduate degree. And so I decided to come here to take a year off. And that lasted like 3 months before we put together a show, some friends of mine. And that's Jobsite. And the rest is history.
So, well, I guess it's the famous chicken and the egg question. Did the Stress Center, it was the Tampa Bay Performing Arts Center?
It was Tampa Bay Performing Arts Center.
Did they come looking for you? We want to start?
Nope.
Or you said, hey, look what we're doing. Isn't this cool? Why don't you give us some money?
We spent our first 2 seasons in the Silver Meteor Gallery in Ybor City, and we were looking pretty much immediately. I mean, as much as we love the Meteor, we realized maybe by our second show that it wasn't a sustainable space for us. It wasn't going to be a long-term solution. Mm-hmm. So it was maybe about in our second year that we did our first show at the Stress Center purely as a rental company. And about a year after that, we got on their radar, just being basically a rental client. We got on their radar sort of in their big office, and they asked us if we would be interested maybe co-producing some shows together and working together. And then that relationship just basically grew naturally over the course of about 3 years until we became resident theater company.
So have you always been in the Schoenberg, or, you know, I think I've seen Jobsite in the Jabe. Forgive me for not committing all this to memory, but
So we're a resident theater company there. Most of the time we perform in the Schoenberg Playhouse, which is a 100-seat black box.
Right.
And although on occasion we have worked in the Jabe Theater, but, you know, it's a I love the space. It's so much more difficult to work in.
Because it's larger?
Yeah. The Jabe's more difficult to work in mostly because it's 300 seats, mm-hmm. right? So it's difficult to sell 300 tickets to a play in Tampa. I mean, like, it is what it is. 100 seat is really the sweet spot. We do very well in 100 seat theater. I'd rather have a 100 seat theater sold out every night than have a 300 seat theater one third of the way full.
Understood. Yeah. That brings me to one of the things that I really appreciate about Job Site is that as a member of the audience, you feel like you're right there.
Right.
You're right in the middle of it. The Thanksgiving play was very much like that. And Meteor Shower. And the other one with Giles in it that I can't remember that came in between those two was called Constellations.
Oh, right. Constellations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, that's the one specifically. It's always a great experience, I have to say, living on this side of the bay to go over there and see the work that you guys do because you really do feel like you're in the middle of it. And I think that's that sweet spot you're talking about. You know, even if you're sitting in the back row, which I, of course, haven't had to do yet because I usually get there early. That's the way I am. Mm-hmm. There's not really a bad seat in a black box like that, you know. 21 years. What have you learned in 21 years, David?
Wow. maybe that I don't know anything.
Yeah, the farther one travels, the less one knows. That's a famous line. Somebody said that somewhere.
You know, it's interesting because I've watched the theater community here develop in such a way over the last 21 years that I look at things now and I question whether or not I would even look to start a theater company today if I came to Tampa.
Wow.
Because when we began, really, you had American Stage. Obviously, they've been here for a good long time.
Yeah.
There was Stageworks with Anna Brennan at the helm. And there was a company called Guerrilla Theater out of Drew Park.
Right. Heard about it. Yeah.
And that was basically it.
Well, that was basically it. But yet you saw an opportunity. You know, is there wiggle room in between the sorts of stuff they were doing and what you wanted to do? I mean, is it that easy to explain?
I think so, yeah, because when a couple of friends of mine and I, the few guys that started JobSite with me, looked around, you know, American Stage was doing pretty, you know, relatively traditional 20th century modern American theater fare.
Yeah.
Guerrilla Theater was doing mostly brand new original plays, primarily that were written by the two people who ran that company. Uh-huh. And Stageworks had sort of their own niche that they were running in, and we looked around and we were like, where's the theater for people like us? We were interested in work that maybe was a little bit younger, a little bit more adventurous, a little bit more off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. Now, clearly in 21 years, we've grayed along with that. We're no longer the young people we were, but I still think that, you know, we sort of have our lane, we have our niche, and now there's so many things to choose from when it comes to theater in Tampa Bay.
That really does remind me of what Mary Hausch and the early people at the Hippodrome did, was to sort of say, and Lauren Caldwell and all of those folks, to try and bring things that maybe you haven't seen before. Art was one of the first shows I remember seeing at the Hippodrome and going, well, this is different, you know, and that's what Lauren was doing.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe turn people on to things that weren't, you know, Long Day's Journey and Tonight, God Love You,
right,
Mr. O'Neill, or Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah, and that's where I feel like we fit in really, really well at the Strass Center, because if you were to put us in contrast with the Broadway season, which is, of course, 95% of people who know that building know it as the building where they can go see Broadway shows. And you look at that experience in a 2,600-seat hall like Carol Morisani Hall versus the experience in this 100-seat black box with the Schemberg Playhouse, you couldn't have two more different experiences. And in terms of people know they can go to the Strass Center for first run Broadway, like Hamilton or Dear Evan Hansen, we are offering something completely different. So these two things are complementary to one another, not in contest with one another. I firmly believe that everyone likes something. When people say that, oh, they're not into theater, they don't like live performance, I usually like will call them out on it and go through and be like, but you know, you like to go to a concert, right? Like you like to go to a stand-up show, right? Like there are things about live performance you enjoy. Mm-hmm. And for most people, I think it's them having the access and opportunity to be able to find something that they go, oh, wait a minute, I like this. And for some people, that is the sort of more diversion-based entertainment, lighter musicals. For other people, that's going to be opera. For some people, it's going to be, you know, edgy, thinky theater. For some people, it's going to be non-linear performance art-based stuff, but there is something out there for everybody.
I would go so far as to say that if someone asked me, where's the edgy, thinky theater around here, I would probably point to job site.
Well, thank you.
Well, you know, I mean, that's where I go to, you know, think outside of the box.
Right, or, and we don't aim for that. I know that for a while, especially like within our first 10 years, we carried this label of like, avant-garde or alternative or experimental.
Isn't that a kiss of death?
Yeah, because we don't position ourselves that way. What we're after is, you know, the line in our mission that I cling to the most is that we're attempting to produce topical, politically and socially relevant theater and to perform it to the largest possible audience. And through all this, basically, I want to encourage people to be citizens, not just consumers. That can be accomplished in so many different ways. Like when you think about things happening in your neighborhood, issues that are very socially based, material that we can bring to the theater that encourages somebody to think about an identity group or a historical event or relationships, or, you know, these are things that hopefully if people are attendant to what we do on stage, I think that if we can get people into the theater to whatever this experience is, it could be about a teacher and a student that play. And if they walk out of the theater thinking about either teachers or students and maybe how they might react to the next student they have or how they might deal differently with an educator next time. That's becoming a better citizen, right? Like, it's not just about voting. It's not just about left or right. I actually had a longtime season ticket holder after the Thanksgiving play write me very disappointed, use the word disappointed. And it was kind of shocking because she wrote in and said, I just want to let you know, I always think that the actors you have on stage and everyone are, you know, typically wonderful. I've been a long time season ticket holder, donor to your company, but I'm so disappointed that you chose to produce this play. And I thought about it, right? And so I engaged the conversation.
I thought that was a pretty, you know, thought provoking piece of comedy.
What she said was that in this day and age, with all the things going on in the world, with all the bad things happening, why would we choose to go after people who are trying to help?
It's a spectrum, man.
Right. And I kind of went, wow, you know, I'm not here to necessarily just attack one side or to, you know, ridicule. I wouldn't say attack. I mean, satire's there to poke fun of. You're not killing the object in satire. You're just ridiculing it, right?
Roasting on an open fire.
Well, when I, you know, engaged her further on it, I basically said, look, this piece makes fun of the theater as much as it sort of makes fun of that liberal woke mentality, right? And we're making fun of what we're doing because the playwright was ridiculing the industry at the same time as sort of like, you know, that idea of performatively woke people.
Much more broad palette of satire than just that one thing.
And maybe that conversation I had with that woman, right? Maybe that was the thing, because so much of what happens in a theater doesn't necessarily happen in the theater. It happens when the drive home, the conversation that you have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, encountering something the next day or the next week or the next month that draws you back to that experience you had in that little room surrounded by all those people you didn't know. And that to me is exciting about theater. So that's the kind of stuff I look for, which doesn't mean, so when I say a play like A Tune of Christmas is not necessarily something job site would do,
yeah,
that is not to disparage it whatsoever. But for me, that kind of play maybe doesn't suit that criteria. And it's liberating. It's actually wonderful right now to be able to work on something that is fun.
Entertainment is something not to be shaking your finger at.
I'm not shaking my finger at it at all. You know, and so it's really nice to not have the pressure of that. And so as a freelance artist, and for all of us as freelance artists,
yeah,
to go in and just work on this show and laugh and have a good time and be like, you know, people are burnt out right now and there's so much going on, and allow people to just come in and laugh for a couple of hours at these silly, weird people. That's nice too.
That's nice too. I want to bring up one other thing, which is you obviously began on your journey as an actor.
Yeah.
Like so many people who are in the administrative side now. Were you able to like espouse these theories and these beliefs and these sort of Jack Handy deep thoughts before you got your PhD, before you went into admin? I mean, I always thought that, you know, being an actor and there's a certain freedom and, you know, daring and all that stuff that you do, that when you go into administration, you become more of an academic, you look at a bigger picture, but you lose that spark. What was your journey like? Why did you want to go into administration, I guess, is the question. You obviously haven't lost the spark.
Yeah, well, and I think that was part of my journey as an actor. you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to do some tours that went internationally. I spent some time in Moscow and other places where I really kind of got to look at what theater does in other parts of the world. I'm not from a theater background. My family didn't go to the theater. I didn't go to a theater until after I started acting.
Wow.
Because I took a class in middle school that was like, I'm going to do this drama class.
Where was this? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Jacksonville.
Ah.
And so truly, I had taken every visual art class that was there to take in my middle school, and there was nothing else to take. And so by default, I took a drama class. I wasn't going to take home ec or shop.
So you're also a visual artist.
Yeah. Well, you know, I quit drawing then.
Well.
So I didn't attend theater until after kind of getting into it for very selfish reasons. And then over the course of watching what theater does and how it functions in society and in culture, and that live dynamic between people, that's all the stuff I got really geeked up and excited about. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I wanted to share that with more people because I didn't see the same cultural predisposition around me in other people outside of the choir, right?
Right. God, I can relate to this.
So again, when I say that when we looked around, the five of us looked around with the beginnings of JobSite in 98, we were saying, where's the stuff for people like us that get to get excited about? Because we know it's there and we'd like to share it with people. And so we started as basically five actors.
Yeah.
Somebody had to direct.
I'll tell you, you know, my version of that is I've been in bands all my life. Somebody had to play bass, and that's why I became a bass player. You became a director because
somebody had to direct the show
forward and everybody else took a step back.
Right. And so we had this agreement originally that, okay, well, you direct this one. Next time around, you know, I get to be on stage and you have to direct. And I just found that I'm good at facilitating it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I care about it. I know it's not for everybody. I'm still able to flex my artistic muscles, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, but I've definitely taken a huge step back.
Yeah.
It's better than living out of a suitcase, which if you're a professional actor, so much of the time, that's what you do.
Very well said, by the way.
And for yeah. me, another exciting thing, one of the things that I'm really trying to do here, and one of the things I love about this opportunity with the Jabe, is that here are now three more long-running shows that are going to happen every year that will employ that many more regional artists.
This is going to go on annually then.
Yeah.
After Tune of Christmas.
Yeah. We've got two more shows lined up this season.
Wow.
And we hope to continue it because the more opportunity we can afford regional artists here, the less they have to live out of a suitcase.
That brings up something that I always talk with people about. On either side of the bed, Carla Hartley sat where you're sitting. We talked about the same thing.
Love her.
And I've talked with Stephanie and with Eric over here in St. Pete that it is almost like seeing a repertory company because I do see the same people in a lot of shows, but some of them, I would say most of them, maybe even all of them are really good.
We are by nature an ensemble theater. And yeah. we make, you know, we're when people will say like, well, seems like you use the same people all the time. I'm like, well, we are an ensemble theater, which yeah. doesn't mean that we just precast everything. It just means we choose material knowing we have a company of actors, no different than Shakespeare, no different than Anton Chekhov, no different than David Mamet, you know, like people write for people. And so we're always on the hunt for new people, but we do believe in their strength in having an ensemble theater because it's like working with a musician you've dealt with before. You kind of yeah. get the feeling of, okay, I know where they're going with this.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of like jazz and the way that artists can work together that have shorthand with one another.
Oh, yeah. I talk to musicians about that all the time, how it's, you know, almost a sort of telepathy.
Yep.
Now, if I go to job site and I see, say, Katrina or Giles or you know, Emily Belvo or Nicole or Amy Gray, I always, this is going to be good because I see these people, you know, not all the time, but it's like, okay, I know that there's going to be a certain level here. Just like there's people who are at Freefall reasonably often and it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
And that becomes a community thing. That becomes something that's familiar to me as part of my community. I can't go to Orlando and see that.
Right. And there was actually a really great article I read in, I think it was the San Francisco paper about a critic talking about how they love when sort of famous stars come in from out of town and things like that, but that they geek out more over their own local celebrities.
Yeah.
And kind of like what you're saying, when they see so-and-so's in a show, they're like really excited.
Yeah. Somebody just wrote, Eric Davis, who's so incredibly busy over at Freefall, just was acting in two shows in a row. He's in The Lion and Winner right now, and he was in the Ghost one, which I can't remember what it's called.
Turn of the Screw.
Turn of the Screw. Thank you, Henry James. And somebody said, you know, Facebook or something. It's like, you know, what a treat. Because Eric, besides being a great administrator and a brilliant director and all those things, is a great, I've seen you acting.
Do
How about
sometimes.
That for a segue, man?
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I basically only get on stage now maybe once every 2 years.
Yeah. I saw Cloud Nine. Were you in something after that?
1984? Was that after Cloud Nine?
No, that was before, I think. Oh, God. Well, don't quote me. Cloud Nine was great, though.
Wow, I'm getting old. I can't
remember. And it was not ready for primetime job site players. Everybody was in that show. And that was fantastic.
Yeah, and that was amazing because I brought in Gavin Hawk to freelance direct that show and said, cast who you want, do what you want. And then he still kind of went to our ensemble.
And yeah. And it worked. It totally worked. I want to wrap this up and say that you've got a Midsummer's Night. Say it for me.
A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Night's Dream. I always put the apostrophe S in the wrong place.
I start rehearsal for that this week, too. As soon as I'm finished with the tune of Christmas, the next day I go directly into rehearsal for Midsummer.
So in December, you're rehearsing. It opens, what, January?
Mid-January. It's like January 15th.
Yeah. So how, you know, you guys do a lot of Shakespeare, but
we do. We do very well with it.
Tempest you did was unbelievable. So
if you liked Tempest, I think you're going to love Midsummer because Jeremy Douglas from the Florida Bee Orchestra is composing an entire brand new score. We've got folks like Cassandra Rose as part of the company singing and doing aerial work. Katrina Stevenson doing aerial work. It's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, you know, I have an idea that I'm going to be doing yet another story about Jeremy very soon because he's been composing all this unbelievable stuff lately. He's getting so further into theatrical composing.
He's a mad genius.
What's your idea for a Midsummer Night's Dream? I mean, do you set it traditionally? What can you tell us? Can you give anything away about what you're going
to
do?
I mean, you know, like you have to set Shakespeare somewhere and no one wants to see it with frilly collars, right? Mm. So in short, because we do have a very small theater that isn't able to have like crazy sets and things like that coming on and off, it's visually a very minimal experience, but we're doing a lot with sound, obviously with all of Jeremy's composed music. Lights, projections to sort of create this very multimedia experience. Mm-hmm. And so it will look, you know, like from the fantasy realm. So we're definitely playing up heavily on the fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
In a way, it's sort of an extension of what we did with The Tempest. There were so many things along the way with what we did with The Tempest where I was like, man, it'd be really cool if we could do this.
Yeah.
Or it'd be really cool if we could do that. And same time, Jeremy, that was the first time he'd composed music for us. And he was like, man, if I could go back and do this over again, I would do things this way.
Wow.
And Katrina, who was on Aerial Silks through that performance, was like, you know, if we could get more people up here. So now we've got actually five actors who are going to be flying.
Wow.
Between Lyra and Trapeze, Aerial Silks and stuff like that. And we learned a lot.
In the Schomburg. Oh my God.
Right. And you know, we just stretched that room to the limits of what we can possibly do. You know, an 11-foot grid is not necessarily ideal for aerial silk work, but we'll get it done.
Yeah. It's not banging into each other. Well, David Jenkins, thank you so much for joining us morning. We want to, this morning, it's this afternoon. Whenever you're listening to this, that's what time it is. So A Tune of Christmas is in its first weekend here at the Strass Center in the Jabe Theater. And what's going on at job site at the moment?
Right, nada.
Rehearsal.
We're just in rehearsal. And we don't even start rehearsal for a few more days. So this is typically we take this time of year a little easy. Also, a great thing with Tune of Christmas is job site has never done any kind of like Christmas show because that's not really a thing for us. So it's nice for us to be able to do a holiday show and have something up and running in the month of December, which normally we'd otherwise always be dark.
But you're pretty much always working anyway, right?
I am pretty much always working, yes.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you in the theater.
Sounds good.
A Catalyst interview with Jobsite Theater's David M. Jenkins from stpetecatalyst.com.